Simon Moore.
Hello and welcome to Checkbooks. This week we're discussing the novel The Glass Room by Simon Moore, one of this year's nominations for the prestigious Booker Prize. The novel, which has already been translated into Czech and had a very positive local reception, is inspired by the functionalist masterpiece The Tugendhat Villa in Brno and covers over half a century of Czech history, focusing mainly on the fates of the Jewish industrialist Viktor Landau and his wife Liesel. I met with a professor of English literature at Charles University's education faculty, Dr. Anna Gurmalova, to discuss in particular the book's depiction of the rich and diverse cultural life of the first Czechoslovak Republic. Hello, Anna.
Hello, Bernie.
The novel covers a long period, over half a century of Czech history. It starts at the end of the 1920s and ends shortly after the end of communism in the early 90s. What for you is the most impressive aspect of this novel?
The novel is a rhapsody on the glass room of the Landauer Villa, and it is also a rhapsody on the ideals of the interwar Czechoslovakia, of the first Czechoslovak Republic.
So what exactly is the glass room?
The glass room of the Landauer house appears in every chapter of the novel, or is referred to. It's a whole floor which does not divide dining room from sitting room from library. And it has two glass walls, one of which can be completely lifted up so that the glass room merges with the garden outside.
I'll just read a very short description of the first time the Landauers who commissioned the building, the whole villa, actually see this. It had become a palace of light. Light bouncing off the chrome pillars, light refulgent on the walls, light glistening on the dew in the garden, light reverberating from the glass. It was as though they stood inside a crystal of salt.
The glass room is actually a metaphor, because it has no closures, no barriers. It's a metaphor for Victor's vision of the future and for what he believes in, for his desire not to be pinned down by race or creed, his determination to speak Czech as well as German, his insistence on reading Lidové noviny, which was the major liberal daily at the time. Karel Čapek was one of the editors of Lidové noviny. His talk of innovation and progress. He wants his children to be citizens of the world. He never realizes he is a Jew before the rise of the Nazi party in Germany.
The story really focuses on this industrialist, Viktor Landauer, Jewish with his Gentile wife Liesel, and they commission the house to be built. And I think at least the first half of the book really focuses on their lives and the lives of some people close to them in this interwar period. Could you tell me a little more about how this period is characterized in the novel?
This is a period of a flourishing culture, and the names that crop up are mainly names connected with Moravian culture, musicians and painters. So, of course, Leoš Janáček, Bohuslav Martinů, and the great Czech woman composer who unfortunately died young, Vítězslava Kapralová, who was a child prodigy, a composer and a pianist, who was actually a lover of Martinů at one time, and then she married Jiří Mucha, the son of Alfons Mucha, who is very well known. And also painters such as Emil Filla, the cubist, who in the novel is a fabulation, of course, but he comes to the housewarming party of the Landauer's villa. The Landauers had an avant-garde taste in culture, and it can be shown both in their villa, which is conceived as a particular work of art. It was built by the fictional architect Rainer von Abt, who was a disciple of Adolf Loos, another architect who was born in Brno.
So you feel as a Czech that he really did express this period very well?
Yes, Czechs will actually realize, reading this book, the freedom people had during the First Czechoslovak Republic. They could travel to Vienna, they could travel to Venice, they often traveled to Paris, something of course unthinkable when we lived behind the Iron Curtain.
This interwar period seemed to be exceptionally diverse and rich in terms of culture.
The interwar Czechoslovakia was quite exceptional. know, if you compare it with the countries around it. It was a very liberal country. It was a country where D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover was translated. It was a second translation, actually, after the German. The German translation omits whole paragraphs. The Czech does not. The Czech came out, actually, before the French translation, even. So that it was a very liberal country, even in terms of sexual life.
Sex and sexuality, in fact, play a very important role in the novel, not only in terms of the complex of relationships around Victor and Liesel, but later in the novel, in the time of communism, when the glass house is used as a therapy centre, the doctor Tomasz also has a very complicated love life.
Yes, he is actually a character which I feel may have been inspired by Milan Kundera's novels, as he is the type of a skeptical intellectual who, during totalitarianism, the only sphere where he still finds freedom is sexuality. And in his portrait, sex and love are completely split. In literary criticism on Kundera, this is called instrumentalization of love, which means misuse of love.
The house, as has been pointed out by many critics, is really the central character of this book. Can you tell me what it stands for?
It stands for reason, stands for light and cosmopolitanism. And this light is very important because as early as the housewarming party, there can be sense, metaphorically, some storm outside, which in fact anticipates the future darkness.
I'll just now read this section from the housewarming. They crowd into the space of the glass room like passengers on the observation deck of a luxury liner. Some of them may be peering out through the windows onto the pitching surface of the city, but, in their muddle of Czech and German, almost all are ignorant of the cold outside and the gathering storm clouds, the first sign of the tempest that is coming. They will argue and debate about trivial things, and until it is too late, they will largely ignore the storm on the horizon. Obviously, the darkness refers to the rise of Nazism, and this eventually leads in 1938 to the exile of the Landauers. And this book carries on covering this period of Nazi occupation, but also describes the post-war Soviet period.
The part of the book connected with the Soviet occupation in 1945, liberation, we should say, and occupation, is actually a very hilarious episode, strangely. And this is because the chief of the Soviet soldiers is a very powerful woman, and she forces the caretaker of the house, Mr. Lanik, who is not a very honorable character, she forces him to sleep with her, which is actually a parody of what has been known as a normal situation when Russian male officers raped Czech women. So she rapes this very dishonorable man, and the lower part of the house becomes a stable for the horses of the soldiers.
In the original, the location of the villa is called Miesto, which is the Czech for town, but in the Czech translation, they've actually called it Brno.
Yes, I understand that Simon Moore wasn't very happy about it. He would have preferred to keep Miesto, but I think it's perfectly reasonable from the Czech point of view, and this is because it could not be just any small provincial Miesto in Moravia. The culture of the city which is described has to be connected with a big city, as Brno is.
I think Simon Moore's book is proving as interesting to Czech readers as it did to an English audience, and I'd like to thank you very much for the insights you've had into the book and for making time to speak to me today. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And if anybody is interested in visiting the Tugendhat Villa, they will have to be quick, because finally, after years of waiting, reconstruction will start next year, and so the villa is only open, for the time being at least, until the end of this year. I'll end with a final reading from the closing pages of the book, when some of the characters who've lived in the villa are reunited. And all around them is the glass room, a place of balance and reason, an ageless place, held in a rectilinear frame that handles light like a substance and volume like a tangible material, and denies the very existence of time.